Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's ready.
From CSG Studios, high above the streets of beautiful Denver, Colorado, you're listening to the Colorado Sports Guys. They talk about sports and stuff. And now your hosts, Jeff Morton, Ross Martin, and Nate Timmons.
What's up, everybody out there entangled in the interwebs? CSG Podcast is back. Ross, hipster's glasses, Martin is out on assignment. We sent him to D.C. to bring back Tim Conley, baby. Woo! Making his way all the way down here from Thornton, we got the king himself, Jeff Morton.
What's up, everybody? It's nice to be back in the southern studios of actually, I was going to think. I was thinking about this. I've been calling where I record up in Thornton the North Studios of CSG. And at this point, you know, the CSG just has really, the last several episodes, as you guys have heard, has been the iPod episode of CSG. They've been self-contained on this little fucking thing here.
Yeah, I had no idea that iPods even existed. It comes with a flip phone and an iPod.
Yeah, it's an iPod Touch. iPod Touch, and it does everything as an iPhone does, but without the $150 a month payment.
I'm still waiting for you to reveal the time machine that you found to get all these fancy products. We are podcasting, yeah, for the first time in a while, and Jeff rolls over to my house to podcast today. And as you'll see, if you go to Twitter where this podcast post will be, we're both rocking Big Honey t-shirts today.
We are. Best nickname and best t-shirt, as far as I'm concerned.
Hell yes. I wanted to buy more of the Denver Stiffs t-shirts this year, but... Uh-huh. I kind of forgot about them. Was the only reason, but I went to D-Line Company's website, dude. They got some dope shit on there. I want to get some of those stickers. Stuff. I need the Doug Moe Denver Stiff sticker.
And it's funny, they had recently sold out of them, and they have to get some back in.
Yeah.
So, but it's good. Look, D-Line, we have a relationship. We've actually had attempting to have a relationship with D-Line going all the way back to 2012. And it didn't come to fruition, but I'm glad to see that they are.
We'll edit that part out.
I'm going to leave that shit in there. We almost had a relationship. We almost had a relationship. It's like, you ever do that? It's like, oh, I almost had a relationship with that girl.
Yeah, that's what Josh Conkey says about all of his GMs. We almost had a relationship, and then they left because I didn't pay him. Oh, shit.
Well, should we address the elephant in the room?
Yeah, the only reason we're even podcasting is because the damn bastards in the DMV are coming after our boy, the con man himself.
I know, right?
Tim Conley. Hot off the presses on April 3rd, David Aldridge and Mr. Katz, Freddie Katz as I like to call him. Do you call him anything else? Just Fred Katz? Is his name even Fred?
Fred Katz. Mr. Katz from the Adult Swim cartoon.
Every time I think of Fred Katz.
Dr. Katz.
Is his name Fred Katz?
Yeah, Fred Katz.
Every time I think of Fred Katz for some reason, I don't know why. I don't even know if I know what he looks like, but I think of The Critic. It stinks.
It stinks. It stinks. Yeah, that's your
right. Does he look like him at all?
No, he doesn't, but it's
well, what the hell? I gave it a shot. But yeah, so back on April 3rd, David Aldridge and Fred Katz report that the Wizards are going to be interested in talking with Denver's Tim Connelly about their potential or about their GM job. I guess they had fired the poor SOB that was running that team, right?
Ernie Grunfeld.
Ground. Yeah. Oh, yeah. For years and years and years.
16 years.
But I'm sure, you know, the Cronkies not wanting to stand in the way of a dream, right? They're going to allow Connelly to pursue talks with the Wizards, correct? Is
yes.
What Adrian Wojnarowski and David Aldridge and Fred Katz also reported.
I don't know if talks is the correct way to put it, but I believe that they were allowing Tim Connelly to go there and listen to them, I guess is the best way to put it. Hear what they had to say.
They're going to allow their sweetheart to be wooed by another and see if he still
Can you
is
imagine
true.
That? Can you imagine that?
Yeah, it's happened to me many times.
Have you allowed a girlfriend to go and they like, no, I you got something good with me.
This happened to me once in high school. A girl told me that I had recently started dating. I think I was a junior in high school. I believe she was a sophomore. She told me that one of our star athletes, it was a senior, who was wanting to court the young lady. So she was curious if she should, you know, if she got to know me, should she get to know him too? I said, you can go get to know him all you want. See ya. It's over. Get out. You want to go? Go. You want to see what the grass is like on the other side? Guess what? She came back weeks later and apologized because that guy did her wrong. Who would have thunk it? A senior star athlete screws over the poor sophomore girl.
The chances are infinitesimal.
I've seen it 100 times. 10 Things I Hate About You. I've seen it in... Mean Girls, plenty of times, plenty of teen movies that I like to watch.
Well, the funny thing about this whole situation is that...
We're talking rom-coms or we're going back to basketball?
We can do both.
Okay, let's go basketball.
Because I think it's applicable in both areas. But you would never allow your significant other... See, like if I was dating a guy, I wouldn't say, you know, what you need to do is go play... You know, you need to... You know, I know you like this guy over here. What you're going to have to do, right, is just go to them and hear them out and hear what they have to say. Like, no. If they want to do that, you say, first of all, you say no. But second of all, if they're insistent, you say goodbye. That is what it is.
And you know what happens when you allow someone to go off and be wooed? They get wooed.
Exactly.
Because they get lied to. And they get told that this dream is going to be great and fantastic. You know, and everything. Oh, you want permission to get rid of John Wall and sign 40 guys? Yeah, we'll do that for you, man. Do whatever you want to do. You come here, do whatever, man. You want to kick this kid's puppy? Go ahead. Doesn't matter. they're going to, you know, it's going to sound good, right? Like they're going to make a good offer. It's going to sound alluring, something new, something exciting. But as we talked about, right, so the whole thing comes down to, you know, what would Connelly want to do? Does he want to go back home and try to rebuild a childhood team perhaps or a team that he got his start with, cracked his teeth with in the NBA? Or does he want to stay in Denver where, as we know, they're homeowners here. Mm-hmm. They have a good thing going. They have Nikola Jokic. They just went to the Western Conference semifinals, something that doesn't happen every day here in Nugget Land. I mean, it's two different jobs, right? You go to Washington, you're rebuilding and trying to get to where the Nuggets are heading. If you stay in Denver, you're trying to take that next step, the most difficult step, into championship land.
Oh, yeah. That is the most, as Masai Ujiri will tell you, that is the most difficult step. And the parallels between Masai Ujiri and Tim Connelly keep coming back. And I think you were looking at some stuff from back in, using the old time machine, back in the day, about stuff that was written, that you were writing, about Masai Ujiri when... the Toronto Raptors were coming to get him.
I did. I remember, I wrote in 2013, just to read the header on this article, I said, if the Sacramento Kings fans and members of government could help retain a franchise, surely Nuggets Nation can have a say in the team keeping Masai Ujiri.
Yeah.
And I think one of my good lines that I used this same line today on Twitter in regards to Tim Connelly, but it holds true for both guys. I said, Masai Ujiri is the kind of person a franchise should want to build around. Same thing goes for Tim Connelly.
Yep.
I mean, that's the kind of guy, that's the model person that you want in your organization.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we're two lowly bloggers, or we're two lowly bloggers that he, you know, we formed a relationship with him, a professional relationship with the team, and we got comfortable to the point where he comes on our podcast to, you know, talk hoops and lets us fire off some silly questions about movies and TV shows and comedy as well. But it doesn't matter who the person is who Conley has talked to or has a relationship with. They always have nothing but good things to say about him.
And he's a great guy.
Even his continued relationships with past players, Darrell Arthur, you know, Timothy Mozgov, Nurkic, all these guys. It's like,
can't find anyone other than, you know, spiteful media members who could really think of a bad word to say about Tim Connolly, you know?
Yeah.
And with rightfully so. And quite frankly, we at CSG, I think we would probably both readily admit that we are biased a little bit when it comes to Tim.
Largely, yeah.
I think, you know, even Masai, when he was here, didn't come on a podcast, you know? Tim was he came right on. Right after he was hired, and it was incredible of him to do that. I mean, I'm speaking of him like he's dead, and he's not. And I will say from my perspective,
yeah, he's just entering his prime.
this is his time.
This is his well-oiled machine.
And I think from my perspective, when I look at this, I think what are the moving parts? What's going on? And is he going into a situation that is more difficult if he leaves? And I'm not at all convinced that he's going to. If you're talking about Jeff Morton's perspective here, I would say the chances of him staying are pretty good.
50-50 at least.
You know, there's probably, yeah. I mean, they could always back a dump truck full of money up to his door. There's nothing, I mean, if you're going to do that, then obviously that's a situation that you're going to have to look at. I would look at it if I was in that, you know, and it was like if I was living in, say, like Texas or something like that, and someone says you can come back to Denver and we're going to triple your salary, I'd be like, you know, it's going to be really hard to pass up, you know?
Yeah, and then, you know, I look at things too. It's like, all right, so let's get real selfish and just look at things from like a Nugget perspective. If you lose Connolly, you lose the guy who has the grand vision for the team. Right, like he has final say. One of the best parts about Tim is that he has a very open relationship with the front office, where they all sit and coordinate. Yeah. Everybody makes their, like draft night. We saw that cool piece with Vic Lombardi, where he was in the draft room for a little bit with the Nuggets. What was that line that I think it was Tommy Balsettis had about a guy runs like a panther? Remember?
Oh leopard. Yeah.
Or there's some funny line in there, but. I mean, there's a great mix of humanism, numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good group. And for myself, working where I do and having like a group of guys that you know you can trust or rely on, you know everything about them, it's like it's great to keep that together, especially now because the Nuggets are looking to take certain steps forward.
Yeah.
And what you'd really want, so let's say if Conley did leave, first off, are you just losing Conley or is he going to take, you know, Rafi Juke with him? Oh, what was that? You know, is he going to take Rafi with him?
Yeah.
Who else is going to go with him? When Masai left, it wasn't just Masai that left. So if you start to lose some of those guys, then you're looking at things forward. Like for me, I'm always thinking, all right, so with a team that's going to be competitive, what do you always need? You always need guys that are going to replenish the cupboard.
Well, yeah.
Next year, you got Michael Porter Jr.
Mm-hmm.
But then moving forward, you're still going to want to be able to pluck away young guys. So you're going to want that same scouting staff that's able to do so much at the end of the first round, into the second round. That's where those guys are going to become incredibly valuable.
One of the hard, and you know this, and
look at the Warriors right now. Who are they trying to put on their team to ensure that this legacy stays if Kevin Durant leaves? Like, they're depending on Kevon Looney taking those steps. And
It's hard to, and you're absolutely right. And where the Nuggets are right now is a team that is playoff ready. And how, where you make the judgment to go, we need to add something in free agency, or we keep continuing to, quote, develop. How you make that decision is the hardest decision you can make. Rebuilding comparatively is easy if you know what you're doing, right? But one of the hardest things to do is go from good to great. It's just that you just need to take that There's the special sauce that a lot of people just don't get. You know, Portland is one of those teams that probably should be greater than they are. You know, they just beat the Nuggets in this series, but they have spent a significant amount of playoff years.
Like right in that 3-6
yeah,
range.
Yeah, being kind of mediocre.
Good.
Yeah, not good, but not great.
But not elite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not mediocre, but good. And I think that that is one of those things.
Mediocre just, as far as good teams.
Yeah, well,
yeah, yeah,
yes,
I got
yeah.
you. I know
mediocre
what
of the good. And that is, that's hard to do. And Masai Ujiri himself will tell you that it is hard to do because he has been had a Toronto team that's been good. And he's not been able to take that leap. Well, this year they got Kawhi.
That's what we had talked. Yeah. We had conversations with Masai when he was in Denver because the Nuggets were in that spot. You know, they were
yep.
pretty good. And how do you get a little bit better?
Yep.
You know, and that was what he was trying to figure out here before the Raptors came calling.
Before the Raptors came, I mean, he got Iguodala.
And then you look yeah. at look at Philadelphia. They had Colangelo as their GM. Well, they had Hinkie. Colangelo comes in. The Ringer gets him fired. And now they have a different guy. Like, their team looks totally different. They still have Embiid, and they still have Simmons. I look at the Nuggets, and I think, okay, the biggest thing that I took away from the playoffs was, all right, Jokic and Murray are gamers, dude.
Yeah.
When the moment is big, whether they made the right play or made the shot or didn't, whatever the case, they were up for it.
Yeah.
I can't say that about anybody else on the roster. I don't know. Millsap, obviously, yeah, he's good, but Millsap's, I mean, he's old.
Yeah. Yes. And that's the hard thing, too, because, you know, sometimes players hit their downhill slide and you're like, how do we replace him? Because
yeah.
he was doing so much on the roster. How do we replace him? There's so many moving parts to this. And I don't blame anyone if they look at a different situation and they think complete rebuild would be probably an easier. I'm not saying that. By the way, this is just my opinion. I'm not saying that Tim Connelly would ever think this way, but I wouldn't blame anyone to think this because even with John Wall's albatross contract, like if you're going to have to completely tear down something, sometimes that's a lot easier than taking that leap from to where the Nuggets are right now to elite because that's the hardest thing you can do without a straight line. And not many, like the Golden State Warriors, there's not many teams that have that straight line.
Yeah,
most of them just go zigzag, and they get that extra little piece that puts them over the top.
See, and then you look at – so let's you got Philly trying to piece together. They have Embiid and Simmons. They add Butler. They add Tobias Harris. They have Redick. They have all these moving pieces, right? Who knows who's going to be there next year? They got a lot of questions to answer. You look at the Celtics. The Celtics were this young, exciting, amazing team that was supposed to be in the finals this year and win 60-plus games, yeah. right? Well, now, what the hell are they going to do? They're in complete chaos. And so, I mean, things look super good in Denver, but goddamn, they go fucking south in a hurry.
They do.
I mean, look at when the Nuggets were the, when they went to the Western Conference Finals, they played Dallas.
They played New Orleans.
Oh, first round is New Orleans. And New Orleans, the year before, had gone to the semis against the Spurs and gone to like 7 games, right?
Yep.
And that was like Chris Paul, super young, David West, super young,
yep.
Tyson Chandler, finally putting together some promise of his talent,
mm-hmm.
right? And then they play the Nuggets the next year. The Nuggets beat him. Chandler is on one ankle. I mean, that is a factor.
It
pisses me off when people say the Nuggets lost to the Warriors and they don't mention that Gallinari and Fried were hurt. So
yeah, that's,
I got to make the qualifiers.
You got to make, yeah, exactly.
But so you have that Hornets team was the next big thing. They were going to – they went toe-to-toe with the Spurs. These guys are going to be amazing. The next year, the Nuggets beat them in the playoffs. That team's never heard from again.
Kenyon Martin reduced David West to a pile of quivering jello.
Yeah.
And so quickly. And that team went from – and you were so right. That is the best example because you can look at them and think, like, exciting, exciting. They came out of nowhere, though. And the Nuggets.
Well, they were just young.
They were young. And then because that was Chris Paul's, third, fourth season?
Something like
that.
Yeah,
because he came in 2005. So, yeah, it was like third, fourth season. So it was a different.
About the same as Jokic.
Yeah, exactly. And but right now, the Nuggets are standing at this precipice. And they've demonstrated that Jokic is a special talent. And he really showed out big time, I think. In these playoffs, to the point where
oh, you could, yeah.
you know, where people were like, you know, maybe this guy can make everyone look better. There is some argument to be made that Jokic took what the Nuggets had and made them better than maybe they are in reality. I would say that for some of the role players.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's what,
you know,
that's what stars do, right?
I think Gary Harris is a big recipient of Nikola Jokic's greatness. But Gary Harris was so good defensively these playoffs that it was a little different.
Well, it's weird too, you know, because you had Harris last season coming into a role of ball handler and a 1-2 game with two-man game with Jokic, and they kind of, I mean, that's not as heavily as part of the offense anymore as it was. Mm-mm. You know, like, it's now Murray and Jokic. It's not Harris and Jokic, which is what it was, because it's
relentless pick and roll.
Murray does a little bit more. Yeah, it's a lot of that. And you know, it's kind of weird because, I mean, the Nuggets were still the Nuggets in the playoffs, but from what we always say and talk about, the playoffs change. It's a different game. It was so much pick and roll with Jokic.
You know what it reminded me
of?
The flex offense that the Utah Jazz would run with Stockton and Malone. That's what it reminded me of, because it was relentlessly pick and roll, 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 always between the two of them. And that's what that was working for them, so I can't blame them. But to a certain extent, I think they caused other players to not get as many chances.
And it gave you a glimpse of what, like, that future could look like with the Nuggets. Because, I mean, the whole, all these assists and passing and moving and this and that, for whatever reason, it doesn't translate into the playoffs. Yeah. What we saw the Nuggets do in the playoffs is what translates into the playoffs. You just got to become better at it.
Yeah.
And to me, man, I mean, come on. When I go back and watch, the age difference is a little bit, but when Kobe Bryant came into the league and was coming off the bench for the Lakers, his first year or two in the postseason, he was horrible.
Yeah.
And Jamal Murray, to me, played pretty damn well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And for, some criticism that he received and blah, 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 it's like, dude, this kid's 21, man. Like, get him in the playoffs a few more years. And I know I always talk about NBA windows being so small, but with Murray, it's like, dude, he's just going to get better and better. Like,
yeah,
he's going to get more confident. He's going to start making those shots. Like, when you watch guys like Harden, Chris Paul, Curry, whoever, Jordan, somebody had posted all these Jordan fadeaways the other day. It's like, really, in the playoffs, and LeBron tweeted it, was talking about, you know, a good shot's a good shot in the playoffs, a two is a two, whatever. When Murray starts hitting all those little jumpers off pick and rolls and hitting those floaters with consistency, game over, dude. You got Jokic crushing it, Murray crushing it. Then it's like, all right, who's going to join those guys? And that's what Conley's got to figure out.
Yep.
Is Harris a guy? Is Barton the guy? Is Malik Beasley going to be a part of this?
Yeah.
You know, can Monty Morris step in there?
Let's talk. I've been waiting to where you and I could podcast together to talk about this. What would you do if you were Tim Connelly, saying that Tim Connelly remains in Denver? What would you do with Will Barton?
I don't know. I was pretty surprised at, I don't want to say Nuggets fans, but I was pretty surprised by all of the hate that I saw he was receiving on Twitter. And I'm a pretty big Barton critic. I didn't think that they should have. I like the fact that they brought him off the bench and played him. I didn't think that Malone should have completely benched him. I tend to think that there has to be something physically wrong with Barton or that he didn't recover quite right. I don't know. I'm not around anymore, but I would tend to think that something had to be wrong with him because he didn't look right.
By the way, did you see another Nuggets player went in for core surgery? Wancho had surgery on his core. So that is, like, I believe the fifth player in the last in the last 3 years that has had a core injury.
You know, say what you will about all the fat comments with Jokic, and God dang, there's a lot of them. Christian Clark had a great one that was on Twitter when he asked Jokic about if he's getting tired or not or something, and Jokic gave like a funny response.
What was that?
I wanted to retweet it and say, hey, you're fat. Why are you so fat? And this is Jokic saying, shut up. Stop asking me if I'm fat.
Hey, you're fat. That's your problem, fat. Eat too much pie.
But, dude, honestly, like, you see all these guys get injured and stuff. And to me, I always come back to, dude, Andre Miller never used to get hurt. And he did pick up a basketball in the offseason, but he would, like, there's stories around Denver of him playing at 24-hour fitnesses, at rec centers, this and that. Wasn't a big weightlifter, this and that and the other. Never really got hurt. Played a ton of basketball. Jokic, I don't really care if he's not going to be like the Joel Embiid of centers. What is Joel Embiid? He's ripped up, he's huge, and he's hurt a lot.
And he misses 35 games a year.
Like, there's something to be said for not overtraining, dude. There really is.
I think, you know, and this is my theory, and I get roasted for this constantly. You had less injuries in the 80s because players didn't work out as much. I think that there's something to overstressing your body because this is an endurance.
Were there less injuries in the 80s?
Yeah. There were people had less catastrophic injuries in the 80s. Like, you would keep, like, there's less knee injuries other than Calvin Natt.
It seems like you have to tear an ACL at some point.
It's part of the rite of passage.
You know, yeah. Kurt Brewer's like, yeah, it's true.
And I think people, it's a cardio sport. It's not a strength sport like the NFL. Who cares how I mean, especially with the way the NBA is now. Who cares how strong you are? If you can get your shot, you can get your shot.
Yeah, and
right?
It's like Jokic was never going to have a 90-inch vertical, so I would rather him be not as aesthetically pleasing as long as he plays a lot. You know, I don't give a shit. Look how you want to look, dude.
And the 80s was a more physical time, and they allowed more, you know, elbows and all this shit. But I will tell you what. Nikola Jokic got beat up a lot in these playoffs, especially against the Spurs.
Even when you're watching games, like I'd be watching games with people, and they're like, "Look at all those cuts on his arm." I'm like, "Oh yeah, I mean that's." You look at any player really in the NBA,
they'll
around their shoulders, and there's just scars from fingernails everywhere. It's horrific.
It's ridiculous, and he was beat up. And I can't tell you what he impressed.
Bring back the sleeve jerseys, damn it.
I know you liked. You like. Did you like those white ones the Nuggets had?
Yeah, the white power ones. Those are a little weird, weren't they? It's like, well, I don't know, guys. Maybe you retire that.
I think we don't need to be.
No, I'm just kidding. I did like those white jerseys.
Those are cool. They look like pajamas to me, but they
were like nice pajamas.
Yeah.
Like pajamas you get at like a fancy hotel.
Yeah. It's like, these are for you, sir. Yeah. Complimentary with the spa treatment. Yes.
Exactly.
But I. You know, where the Nuggets are right now, and this is a good, you know, kind of a good segue into this, where the Nuggets are right now, they went into the playoffs at a 2 seed and surprised everyone, and then they kind of finessed the league to get the kind of the favorable matchups that they thought were favorable. I don't think this
worked
was
for the Nuggets in 2009.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's what they say, playoffs are about matchups. They're not about necessarily anything else. And
well, I mean, you got to make some shots.
You do, and I tell you what, if... You know, I was talking to you
Nuggets
about...
Nuggets didn't fucking miss 900 threes. They'd probably still be playing basketball.
What was I saying before the podcast? It wasn't C.J. McCollum that hurt the Nuggets. It was Evan Turner. You know, you get a guy who is complete dog shit for most of the playoffs, and he's like suddenly has 14 points.
How about Rodney Hood? Works out for the Nuggets, pre-draft, pukes, totally out of shape, horrible, comes back in the playoffs and murders the Nuggets.
I will never forget that story. When was that? That was that workout 2013, 14?
I didn't even know who Rodney Hood was at that time.
Yeah, it was from Duke, right? And then he came here, and he just, like, his workout was not
garbage.
Good. It was not good.
But it wasn't as bad as Justice Winslow, maybe.
Oh, my God. That was I still get shit for
but
that.
But to answer your original question, what would I do with Barton? He didn't look right to me in the playoffs. Mentally, you know, he's always there. He's a gamer. My biggest thing with Barton is he's a great rebounder. I like his rebounding ability, his defensive rebounding ability. I love his ability around the rim when he's going to the rim. Just like any other shooter, when he gets hot, he wants to keep shooting. Simmons always talks about it. There's players in the league that it's good when they get hot because if they get somewhat hot. Like if Barton scores 16 for you, the Nuggets are probably winning that game.
Yeah.
Barton scores 35 for you, you probably lost that game.
Yeah.
I would probably turn the position over to Michael Porter Jr. and trade Will Barton and go with somebody else as your backup.
So you would commit to the youth. Just commit to the youth 100%.
Don't get me wrong. I love farting Will Barton.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any place on this team to pay him. What is he making? 16 to 20 million, somewhere in that range?
12. 12 per, I think.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
I keep him.
Yeah, I think it was four at 48, right? So yeah.
Shit. Okay. I take everything back. Here's what I do. I start Michael Porter Jr. and I bring Barton off the bench. And if Barton doesn't want to come off the bench, I trade him.
I just we are back to our what was our old mantra? Is that we
takesies backsies.
We don't always have accurate information here on the I'm looking it up right now. Fill the dead air, dude.
No, I'm pretty sure you're right. But that's what I would if Barton's on a reasonable contract, I'd keep him and try to work him into a bench role. He's killer off the bench, and you can turn the offense over to him off the bench. I thought naming him a starter last year was a mistake.
It's 4 years, $53 million.
Four at 53? Trade him.
So 13-2 a year. Oh, wait. Roughly, right around there. So about $14 million is probably too much for him.
I'd probably keep him next year, because next year you're probably going to be able to restructure Millsap's contract.
That's a big one.
You should be able to bring him back. If you get a better option, I might take it. I wasn't very impressed with Millsap at all. I kept telling people that I was watching games with, I go, that guy makes over $30 million this year.
Why?
And they go, what? And I'm like, yeah.
Now, your impression, as I slam down a coffee cup, your impression of Millsap, particularly after game five, because game five is the one where he went off and they posted him up like a billion times.
Yeah.
And Portland adjusted and he was completely shut down in both game six and game seven. Do you think that a different player wouldn't have been able to be shut down so thoroughly like that?
No, probably not. I mean, Portland's killer at adjustments. Mm-hmm. Stotts is a good coach. I just think Millsap's old. If you can get him back, I'd have him back next year and have him starting still.
Yeah.
But I don't want to pay him anywhere near $10 million. I want to pay him like $7 million.
I wish they could give him the mid-level exception, but I don't.
How much is that now? Nine?
I think it's like eight or nine. It's like I don't know if they can do that. I don't think they can decline him and sign him to the MLE. So.
He's weird because he's good and he's bad at the same time. Like, he's got bad hands sometimes. Like, Jokic will throw him a pass and he just drops it. He tries to dribble. He loves to dribble off his feet and his legs sometimes, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I can't dribble for shit, so whatever.
He's a good defensive player, though.
His passing's good. His defense is good sometimes. He's not an incredible shot blocker, but he makes some incredible blocks.
Yeah.
He's tough. He's experienced. He's everything you want, everything you really need. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, he's good, but it's not. He doesn't look like the Paul Millsap from 3 years ago.
No. The peak Paul Millsap was probably that Atlanta team from 2014-15, right on there.
Yeah, but I think if you can bring him back in a reasonable rate for another season, why not? I mean, who else are you going to bring in here? Blake Griffin? Is he a free agent?
No.
Yeah.
No, he's got a massive contract, too.
Oh, that's right. He's got a mega deal. So, I mean, yeah, who else are you going to bring in? I don't really want to bring anybody else in. He seems to be... Millsap's not super
T-Rex
selfish
arms,
either.
In New Orleans right now.
Julius Randle?
Julius Randle, yeah.
I love me some Julius Randle.
I mean, I think isn't he a free agent?
He might be. I think he might be. His defense is just horrific, isn't it?
I think he improved this year. I mean, he really stood out to me. Of course, he was with...
Dude, he's a badass offensive player.
He was with Chris Finch this year, and I think that really helped his offense.
Speaking of Nuggets, not wanting to pay people. Chris Finch, ladies and gentlemen. Offensive genius.
Yeah, offensive genius.
Puts together one of the best offenses anyone's ever seen in years. Let's let him go. Yeah, dude, I like Millsap. And I hate him at the same time.
Well, I just don't.
I like when Millsap's good, and when he's bad, I don't like him.
You don't need him taking up that much of your cap.
Yeah, you got to restructure that deal.
And look,
but the Nuggets need fucking Jarrett Vanderbilt too. I forgot about him.
Yeah, but I mean, this is something that
can he play?
I don't know.
Can we start this guy? Is he the next Montrezl Harrell?
He's
was much better than Kenneth Faried.
I mean, I got to tell you, he's anything with Vanderbilt is theoretical at this point. But I mean, he's a good passer. He's a really good passer
Conley told us on the pod. He loves his passing, loves his rebounding, loves his toughness, loves his attitude. I'm like, well, this
great
sounds
passer.
Like a player.
I mean, he's a gamer.
So the difference is with a guy like Vanderbilt, I don't know how well he finishes around the rim. Julius Randle, if he's anywhere around the rim, ball's going in the hoop.
This is true. This is 100% true.
And Barton's the same way. Barton's a guy that can somehow slink his little body through the lane and get you layups, and he can make them at a ton of different angles.
How much would Julius Randle work with Nikola Jokic, though?
I don't know. And see, that's when you start. You bring in, you lose Millsap and you bring in Randle, you have a completely different team. See, 100% different.
I think Nikola Jokic's dream lineup would be him and a bunch of shooters. You know, play it like the old Orlando Magic did, where it was Dwight Howard and a bunch of people who shot threes.
Do you think Porter has any possibility of playing power forward, or is he 100% small forward like I think he is? I thought the same thing about Wancho. No, I thought Wancho should have been a four.
Wancho was a four.
His career is done. Right?
I don't know. I think he was affected by the core injury this year.
Mono last year, the core this year. What's next year going to be?
I don't know. The plague.
He's getting bad in Spain, guys.
He's just going to get old-timey injury, old-timey diseases. You know?
I thought Wancho was going to be perfect, dude. I really did. I thought he was going to be a starter. I thought he was going to be a player. I thought worst-case scenario, he would be like a really good bench player.
Now,
what the hell happened to him?
This year, from what it was explained to me, is that later in the year, like from January, he had that core injury.
So before that, though, was he tearing shit up?
Yeah, he had a good start to the year. Remember, he was starting.
Yeah.
He started because of the injury to Barton.
To Barton, yep.
And
messed around with the lineups. Dude, I really like... Let's continue with Wancho. Wancho dunk, gotcha dunk.
No, that's all I had with Wancho. I mean,
it's really hard to just figure where some of these guys fit in. You know, it really is. And you start thinking about, okay, like the Trey Lyles experiment's over, right?
Yeah, man, there's two guys who will definitely not be back. Trey Lyles, Tyler Lydon.
Lydon?
Yeah, because they declined his option.
Oh.
So... That's one thing that would he the one of the most disheartening drafts in Nuggets history featured Tyler Lydon, and it has nothing. It's not his fault.
It's just, that Rafe LaFrance draft is pretty fucking brutal.
Oh, that was the worst.
So yeah, I mean, I just start like you're talking about, who are the Nuggets going to put around? To me, it's who are they going to put around Murray and Jokic? Is Harris still part of that core? Is he untouchable?
I think for now, yeah. I mean,
you got to see more from him in the next playoffs.
I believe he's
be
entering into the third year of his contract.
He's making about 18, right?
Yeah.
So you got to make sure on him.
Yeah.
Next year is probably a make or break year for Harris.
I mean, he has got, they structured his deal to where he's got like some incentives his final season, I think.
Love Harris.
His actual average is not that big. So his contract is actually pretty reasonable. For what he does. Harris's problem is that he's always injured. I mean, he always misses 30 games a year now. And
that's crazy.
It's just...
And it's like, it's not that big of a deal considering Malik Beasley is... How the hell did Michael Malone develop such trust with Malik Beasley? Beasley seems like that guy that George Karl would have just buried, but every time he played him, he kicked ass, you know? And you're fucking play him, George!
Every team needs a J.R. Smith, right?
Yeah,
and not quite as crazy as J.R. Smith was, but I mean Malik. One of the things that saves Malik.
Why are you
comparing
Malik Beasley and J.R. Smith?
Because
it's a horrible comp.
Because he is athletic.
He's your utility guy off the bench.
He's a utility. I mean, they play the same position. It's the utility guy, freakishly athletic guy. Doesn't dribble the ball as much as J.R. did, but he is the freakishly athletic person who gets by largely because he is that athletic.
Yeah, he's a freak.
There's no one on the Nuggets team as athletic as Malik Beasley, period. And, that's one of those things.
He's fun to watch play. I like Beasley.
When he's going and he gets those dunks going, I mean, I forget which game it was. I think it was game two or game one against the Spurs where he almost, after Derek White had his dunk on Paul Millsap, he came back and almost annihilated someone on the other end with a dunk. It was like crowd got crazy.
Did you talk much with Beasley?
A little bit. I mean, he's a nice guy, but I don't know him as well as some other guys. I don't know him as well as I knew Wilson Chandler.
Is Beasley a talker? Is he chatting, or is he kind of
not really
dresses and get the hell out of there?
He doesn't talk as much as Will Barton does.
Oh yeah, I mean, who does? Well, Bart loves to talk, man.
Who's a real talker in that locker room? Not a lot of people.
Well, I just wonder with Malik, I wonder what his like his mental makeup is like. He seems like a very interesting player, and it's hard to be like, even when they drafted him out of Florida State at 19 coming off an ACL, it's like, dude, this kid was a lotto pick if he's healthy. And it's to me, Malik Beasley is a sky is the limit type guy still. I don't think that we can cap anything with him yet. If he shows more consistency with his shot and just a little more consistency overall, he's going to be killer.
He was drafted same one as Jamal Murray, right? So that was the Murray Wancho. And Beasley.
Beasley, right.
And then the disaster draft of 2017, that one actually had second round Monty Morris, you know, and Vlatko Chanchar, who is actually I have seen play, and he is, I think he's going to be good. I talked to a couple people about him in the know, and they raved about Chanchar. They said, like, this guy is amazing. And
is it
going to
be like, what was that guy, Radicevich?
No.
It's going to be another.
Nikola.
He's the next.
Radicevich. The next Goran Dragic.
Goran Dragic, yes. He's the next Dragic.
He's got.
Sadly, we never saw much of him besides the bench at Summer League.
I will never forget when he was out here a couple of years ago. I went over and I said, "Ken, you want to interview?" And he goes, "Why do you want to talk to me?"
He's like, "Dude, I suck. I'm horrible."
Well, I'll never forget that. He's like, "No, I just want to talk to you." And I put it on the old CSG YouTube that doesn't exist anymore.
But I do really wonder though. Yeah, what does the starting lineup look like next year? I think ideally it would be Murray, Harris, Porter, Millsap, Jokic. That's what I would try to do, and I'd try to go Morris, Beasley, Barton, question mark at power forward, and Plumdog. Is Plumdog still around, or is he a free agent?
No, he's still under contract.
All right,
I talk about someone who had a rough playoff.
Yeah, I didn't like the Jokic Plumlee lineups at all because both those guys are good passers.
That
needs space to operate.
Yeah.
And I didn't like playing those guys at the same time. I wasn't a big fan of that. In some stretches, is it effective? Of course it is. But overall, not a huge fan of the big lineups.
Well, it's because Plumlee, his inclination is to dive to the rim.
And it clogs shit up.
It just clogs the paint like you would not believe. In an era where there's like manufactured spacing, he makes it to where it's 90s spacing.
Yeah.
In there. So it is one of those things. But I honestly I like that lineup that you put in there. I like having Porter in there. I just don't think they're going to start him. I think they're going to bring him off the bench, and because I think there's a natural inclination to be protective of whatever injury.
He hasn't earned anything yet. You got to make him earn it. Yeah. You're gonna start Barton again, and I
hope they don't. Barton is best coming off the bench.
I've never really understood the. I mean, I guess I do. Nobody wants to be the backup quarterback, you know.
Yeah,
I've never understood the reluctancy of guys not embracing a bench role of being like the leader of the bench.
What is it? Who is it? Yeah, it was George. George used to say it's not who starts, it's who finishes.
Yeah.
And
I wouldn't really want Barton out there to finish either, though. Sometimes.
When he's
got it going, he's got it going.
He's got some game-winning shots.
Yeah.
You know, under
the
his
problem
belt.
Is he will take those game-winning shots if he's out there, you know? Like, he still thinks there's a natural pecking order to the team, but if Barton's got the ball, he's at the top of that pecking order. I love Will Barton. I love hate Will Barton as well.
I love hate
every single player. When players are good, I love them. When players are bad, I hate them.
Well, see, that's the thing. And I think at essence, and I've always said this, I did a podcast with Brendan Vogt. He was where he talks to media. And I told him, I said, Brenda, I'm not media. I'm a fan. I've always been a fan. And the good thing about, like, you know, being from a perspective where you always watch it on TV, kind of like I was back in 2009, is that you are free to be as emotional as you could possibly be. with this, and then like you don't have to like step back and be objective. And I kind of miss those days because I honestly, there were times where I wanted to be as completely irrational as possible with these people, you know, just be completely irrational and not have to worry about anything else. Just be saying like, this guy's a bum.
Yeah.
Why they're losing because of this guy. And then the next day he's like, oh, I love him.
Yeah, he's fine. It's funny how you get those, like, I don't know. I was just seeing that, you know, Malone's up for Coach of the Year, right? He's a finalist for Coach of the Year.
Yeah, one of the three finalists. Yeah.
Had the Nuggets beaten the Blazers, he easily should have gotten it because they manufactured the end of their season to be able to have those matchups. So had the Nuggets beaten the Blazers, I think you have to have – that would have been the only time you had to factor in the postseason with the regular season success because Malone was a damn genius if the Nuggets beat the Blazers.
Yeah.
The Nuggets lost to the Blazers, you can't win Coach of the Year because – sure, you set yourself up, but you didn't ultimately succeed with your plan. Sorry, you don't win it. But it was a hell of a run, and they should have given it to him if the Nuggets would have beat the Blazers.
I thought that he did a fine job this year. I think in previous years it's been a learning experience for him, and there are games where you could point to decisions he made that cost the Nuggets games, and they were very obvious.
As far as the coaching aspect goes, Malone's a better Coach of the Year candidate, like, in the locker room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As far as the actual X's and O's, I don't know. I still get from like, it's Jokic, bro.
I still say he gets the yips. He gets the yips sometimes, and I think that...
And the weird timeouts, you can always... It's like, those. Like don't...
He's really improved on those this year. I mean, it was a year, last year, he would take the timeout... like less than a minute before the quarter break.
Yeah.
And you're like, why are you doing that?
I know. And they just come back. And then I noticed too in the playoffs, you know, Jokic still did those absolutely infuriating, like grabbing Lillard at half court. It's like, why are you guys like, I was so pissed in that game 7 at all those damn free throws the Nuggets were giving them. And I'm just like, why are they doing this? Why are they fouling away from the ball? They're in the damn bonus. Oh. You fouled the guy 54 feet away from the damn hoop. Like, I was losing my mind.
But those are
the things that come with experience,
well,
right?
Yeah, like, and I told you before the podcast, it reminded me of the, as everyone knows, everything comes back to the 94 team for me. But it reminded me of the 94 team when they hit the game 7 wall in the fourth quarter against the Jazz, where it just everything caught up to them. They lost their legs, they lost their momentum, they lost everything. And it looked to me like in the second half specifically, both Jamal and to a certain extent some other, maybe Gary Harris and Paul Millsap, they just hit the brick wall and they could not overcome it. And
it seemed like, too, once they got like tired, like mentally tired or maybe even physically tired, like you indicate there, that it just like they're the smart basketball decision making went out the window. There was like 3-point attempts, and it's like then they had a couple.
Craig tooting that air ball 3-pointer after they get the steal was one. It was
yeah. They had some like 2-on-1, 3-on-1 scenarios where they shot threes out of them, and
then
like,
he overshot.
Or they're dying to get a basket. It's like just go get a fucking basket. just go get a layup. It's right there.
It's like I was sitting there.
The
and
Blazers
was,
were like trying to let the Nuggets blow them out, and they wouldn't do it. It's
I had
like,
my head.
Blow him out!
I had my head in my hands, and I'm like, of all the people you want shooting a three-pointer there, it is not Torrey Craig. And
I'll tell you what, though, Torrey Craig probably bought himself another 5 years in the NBA with his playoffs.
Tell you what, the Malone's best decision
was... He looks like the shit, dude. I like Torrey Craig.
Malone's best decision was bringing Torrey Craig in the starting lineup because at that point he served the Dante Jones role.
I think every time he makes a basket, they should play, "This is how we do it."
Montel Jordan.
He just sound, every time I think Torrey Craig, bro, I can't not think of like R&B music. He just sounds like an R&B singer, doesn't it? Torrey Craig. Can't you see his CD at Best Buy where he's got like this semi-serious look on his face? No shirt on.
No shirt on.
Yeah, like, kind of sweaty.
Like Maxwell.
Dude. You know, or he's just in like a suit, you know, like on the back, he's just in a suit, looking all sharp.
Oh my God, I'm every time I look at Torrey Craig, I'm not going to be able to unsee that. It's R&B. Oh my God.
I bet he listens to R&B.
Yeah, I bet he does. You know, he spent some time in Australia, I mean, whatever they listen to down there.
What ended up ultimately happening with his nose? It was just a bruise? He didn't break his nose?
I think
he got rid of that damn mask ASAP, too.
Yeah, he got rid of the mask, but he injured his... You think he jammed his finger in game seven.
I remember that talking to, was it Chandler that played with a mask for a very brief time?
Yeah.
I talked to somebody Wilson. At the Nuggets, yeah, that played with a mask, and they talked about how horrible it was.
Oh, yeah.
I think Kufis played with one, too, for a short duration and just kept talking about it fogging up and feeling funny on his face. It's like, I wouldn't be able to play with a fucking mask
on. Talk about a guy who doesn't need more things making him look unusual. Coast to Kufis.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Kufis, the camera can see on top of your head. You're bald. Shave your head, Kufis.
Yes, exactly.
God,
wasn't
Kufis.
Wasn't Costa Kufis on the Ohio State teams that played Florida in the championship games with Odin? Wasn't he like the backup?
Yeah, I think he had a rivalry with Mark Titus, who was on those teams.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I don't know why I remember that shit, but those Florida teams that had Corey Brewer and
Al Horford.
Al Horford and Joakim Noah.
Yeah. Those are some good-ass Florida teams.
Yeah, I know. Man.
But yeah, I think the Nuggets got some players, though, dude. That's the other thing is if Michael Porter assumes the starting small forward position and if you can get a frost advisory, what the hell is happening with this weather? So if you have – that's the big thing, too, is Torrey Craig.
Yeah.
I mean, he's older, right? What is he, 28?
Yes.
Something like that?
Yeah, he's 28.
Why not make him the backup small forward and just let Barton go? Trade him.
I think Will Barton has some value as your sixth man.
Tremendous value. But Torrey Craig has tremendous value as a bench player as well.
Yeah, but he's more of a defensive specialist. And, I mean, those guys are really hard to slot because if you're not starting them, it's hard to bring in a guy in the second unit that's just a defensive specialist, you know?
But then in the playoffs, I mean, he was, like, essential to a lot of what they were trying to do.
Yeah, well, yes, he was. Well, like I said, he served the Donte Jones role. It was the guy that was a, you know, but he played more than Donte Jones did. But, I mean, honestly, I think the Nuggets probably would have been better off if they just played him. What did George used to play Donte Jones, like, what, the first
eight minutes of each half?
Yeah.
Like, the first half and the second half, and you never saw him again.
Yeah,
and then fourth quarter, he'd come into key defensive scenarios.
Yeah, and
he tripped Kobe.
Yeah. He was in there to
agitate and defend.
People who think that, you know, guys like that can there's guys like that who can in like serve a role, and if they do the role to the best, then they are absolutely invaluable to your team. Kind of like
Andre Roberson.
Well, Bruce Bowen. Okay, Bruce Bowen would come in and injure players' ankles, you know.
Yeah.
you had, who's the Allen on the Grizzlies?
Tony Allen.
Tony Allen.
Yep.
You know, but he played more than Donte Jones ever did. But those guys come in and they serve a role, but it's hard to slot them in other places. Like with a bench unit that you need to score. It's kind of like playing, you know, you're already playing the not the best players, you know?
Yeah, because you look at that and you're like, okay, so you have Monty and you'd have Beasley. Well, Morris is not he's not going to shoot it 20 times a game. He's just not going to do that. Plumlee's not. Beasley's probably not. That is pretty much cut and dry for a guy like Will Barton, unless you got a big-time scoring power forward to come off your bench. But, I mean, that's pretty it's not very likely in the NBA anymore.
I can't think
of much bench units that feature a power forward that does a lot of scoring.
Not anymore.
Is there any? It's not always anymore. Either a two or a three, right?
I can't think of an NBA history many power forwards that kind of come off the bench and
fill it up.
And filled it up. Can you think of any?
I mean, yeah, maybe. It'd take a while. Though.
I don't recall. I mean, Kevin McHale. He was a sixth man.
He was a sixth man for a while, right?
Yeah, he came off the bench, and he was a center/power forward.
Yeah, in today's NBA, it's hard to imagine that.
I can't.
A possibility.
Think of that.
So, I guess you got to keep Barton. You know, you're probably not going to get out of Beasley. He's not going to create for himself a bunch.
Well, I take that back because, like, players will come in, and there are fours that they'll just shoot. All they do is shoot threes.
Yeah,
so it's like, well,
like Ersan Ilyasova, or maybe.
Yeah, a guy like that.
Nikola Mirotic.
Yeah, or Dario Saric or someone like that, who's kind of a three, but, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's when you'd need the Tim Connelly front office to find you a guy in the draft that's going to be able to do that down the road.
Bringing it full circle, Nate.
Yeah.
Full circle. And I agree. And I've done, and to address this, I, like I said, again, I am not convinced that he will be leaving. I don't think things are necessarily as they were portrayed via media reports yesterday.
Where is Conley? You talked to him. Is he even there? Is he even in D.C.? Do we
know?
No,
yeah, he went there. He went there to listen. That is 100% true. But I don't think certain things that were reported yesterday are true.
Does he still have family that works for the Wizards?
I don't think so.
No.
Not anymore.
Yeah, other teams. All right.
We
always say this about NBA players, so let's say it about front office guys too. Hey, man, you got the whole summer to live wherever you want, right?
Yeah.
Stay in Denver.
Stay in Denver, man. The weather here, I'll tell you this, I would rather live in Denver and then go back to D.C. where it's humid all the time.
Conley put it on the court.
Yeah.
The days of sunshine, right?
Yeah. Just right here.
Is it 300 plus? What is on the court?
Oh, it's, yeah.
200? 300? Yeah. I think it's 300 days
of sunshine.
Yeah, he put it on the court for a reason.
Yeah.
He's told us countless times on this podcast. He's a Denverite now.
Yep. And
he's seen the city grow. He can't leave. You can't leave, Tim.
And I will say this. We both know Artur. We both met Arturis Karnasovas the very same day we met Tim Connolly, right?
Yeah.
And, Arturis is a good guy, and their personalities are diametrically opposed, not like in opposition, but they're just completely different personalities.
Yeah, they're very, very different and seem, by all indications, by all the success we've seen, work tremendously together.
They complement each other tremendously.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of those things where you remove a piece, does it work as well? You know, and the same would apply to Connolly if he left.
Right, because those two together, it's like, they probably have disagreements, you know, or they see things differently, but probably come to the same conclusions on some things through different means. And then sometimes, you know, one guy may want to go one way and they might talk each other back, or, you know, that's what I like about how this Denver front office works and how they, you know, we don't know everything. Obviously, we've gotten to sit in on a couple of cool things here and there, but you never get the full picture. Media is never going to have a full picture of what goes on behind closed doors.
No.
Like, even if you're in the locker room every game, you don't know shit about that team for a very large part. You know what I mean? When you're in there, it's different than when you're out of there. Even when you walk in there and it's loud and fun and going crazy, and then you go in there and things change.
I will tell you, I'll say this, something I said on Twitter about 3-4 weeks ago. Inevitably, we're all wrong after all we say. It's because we don't know everything that goes on. Is just, it's impossible to know everything, and we can only get snapshots of what it is. And you know, quite frankly, I on a selfish level, I would miss having Tim. I mean, I think you'd say the same thing. I miss having Tim available.
Yeah.
I miss him as a person, but I mean, miss him being able to come on the podcast and do what he has done with us for 6 years. You know?
Yeah, and we talked about it when we had Masai here. We felt pretty spoiled having a GM that was so outreaching to a blogger community that was not respected really by national standards of what media is.
And that was basically dipping their toe in the water with us too, because you weren't, I think you were still in Cody.
Casper.
When that we had the Carmelo Anthony going away party, which was not a great idea to call it that. It's another story. And
it's hilarious.
That was an Andy thing, and I think he would regret that. But we all know Andy and Carmelo Anthony. And Masai and Josh came to that, and that was February of 2011.
Yeah.
I mean, no one was doing that stuff for bloggers back then. It was them dipping their toe into something that at that point was completely alien. But I tell you what, that doesn't hold a candle to Tim Connolly fully embracing this, this is.
Connolly, he allowed us to do a Q&A with, you know, our entire Denver Stiff staff at one point at Jake's.
At Jake's, yeah.
You know, we got to just fire, everyone there got to just fire off whatever questions you had. You know?
Yeah, it was fun. It was
fun for him, too, because like he says, it's fun for him to hear what the fans think and to keep a beat on the fan perspective.
Well, and we are both, we're right around his age. You know, he can relate to us. And I've said this about Stiffs for a long time, when we started it. Andy's 2.5 years older than me. Like, I'm about 4 years older than you. We were not guys who were started when we were all in college. You know, we were y'all started later on and became different from what bloggers were. So in a sense that Stiff stood out a little bit in the blogging community. And I think that our age, believe it or not, I think allowed us to get that embrace. And Tim Connolly, I think, has, we owe, I'm not going to say quote unquote, owe, but he did something that I don't think any other GM in the league would do. Like, I've not heard a single GM go on podcasts, local podcasts, like he has with us.
Well, that's what I'd say about, you know, about Tim is he's just such a genuine, real person. People like that don't come along every day.
No.
And when you have him in your organization, you should fight tooth and nail to keep him. But it is a credit to the Nuggets that they don't hold guys hostage just because they have a contract either.
Yeah.
It is nice to be like, hey, man, we know that's your home. That's your childhood.
Yeah.
That's where you cut your teeth in the NBA. You want to go have a conversation. Exactly. Go ahead. You know, like, it's life. You know, we're not going to keep you here. And essentially, you know, if Tim didn't want to be here and wanted to be there, that's what we say with players all the time. It's decisions. It's your own life.
That's a credit
life,
to Josh.
You know,
that's a Josh Kroenke thing. And I'm glad that Josh has that view.
It sucks because at the same time, you can take that outlook and say, is Stan Kroenke and Josh Kroenke and Ann Kroenke, are they even competitive? Do they want to win? Do they want to field a team here?
Yeah.
They're going to have all these great guys come in and turn things around and have the franchise looking up, and then they're going to let them leave? Screw that. Like, there's a lot of, I saw a lot of that on Twitter, and I can't totally argue with that either. I mean, that's legit as well. It's like, it's not just a money thing, but I can see both sides of all of it.
There is a certain media member who, I won't name names, but there is a certain media member, prominent media member, who I don't think is necessarily believing in that Tim Connolly is what he is all that. And I think that kind of thing leads to people underestimating Tim Connolly. And I think he has really done the Columbo thing really well. I mean, he has done the, you're underestimating me, kind of like Nikola Jokic. And this is why I bring this all back.
They do have pretty, they don't want credit for shit.
Yeah. I bring this all back. This team, people say like they reflect Nikola Jokic. No, this entire organization reflects Tim Connolly.
Damn, dude, I never thought about that.
And Tim's personality is all over everything in this organization, including Nikola Jokic.
Dude, when they say, though, that there is this, like, when you hear media guys, like, when we all talk about this culture change that happened in Denver, when we were in the locker rooms with Nate Robinson blasting music and...
Yeah.
Basically, it was like walking into a freaking funeral home in there some nights, you know, and it was like, it was so different by the time I left with what Conley had ushered in and with what Michael Malone had ushered in.
Yeah.
The culture that they built, and even it's a credit, like you said, it's a reflection of Tim Connolly. I mean, the whole thing.
Totally.
And I can't imagine, you know, like Adam Mares and Harrison Wind and all these guys that are bringing us this news. I mean, this is a tremendous organization to write about and to be around. And I don't know. I mean, it's got to be a lot of fun.
You remember, I mean, look, you were there a lot with the 2012-13 squad. I mean, that was, you got to cover a really joyous time with the Denver Nuggets winning 57 games. There's nothing like that, you know, especially during that 15-game winning streak. You know, that's something that, you know, I was semi there, but you were there all the time. And the contrast between that and the following season was so stark. And so, even with the offering in Tim Connolly and whatever he brought in, the contrast in the locker room was just unbelievable. And it took years for that to change. I mean, even the first year of Michael Malone's tenure, wasn't all roses, you know.
Not at all. I mean, he still had some odd personalities on that team. But I would even say, I wasn't in the locker room, obviously, this year. But from where I was with Malone and Jokic and that team, that was a completely different vibe even from the Iguodala Western Conference, or I don't want to say Western Conference Finals team.
I have no idea.
First round exit team. Jesus.
But the 57
win team, that was a fun locker room, and that was a good group of guys, and there were some guys that were close. It was kind of a cliquey locker room, though. There were some little cliques in there. But it was not like there wasn't the same relationship between George Karl and the players as there is between Michael Malone and the players. There's much more love between Malone and this team than there ever was between Karl and his team. And even, like, Iguodala was not a very warm personality with the rest of the guys in that locker room. They were friendly, obviously, and there's lasting relationships in there, but I don't think, even though that was a fun locker room and a good locker room, it's not like what this team has now, I wouldn't imagine.
I would like to write a book about what it was like to cover Nate Robinson. Just personally, just hearing the stuff that you hear in that locker room.
Yeah.
The famous story, I think I've told on this podcast before, it was not a night you were there. It was me and Derek Kessinger and Dylan Thomas and Chris Dempsey. And they had all left, and I was waiting for...
Dempsey posts!
I was waiting for Evan Fournier, because he and I would always talk. And I went, just waking up in the morning, God, thank God. I was doing, this was a good day. Nate Robinson hears me. And he goes, wait, what are you doing? What are you doing? I said, oh, what are you talking about, Nate? He goes, what are you doing? Was that Ice Cube? Was that Ice Cube? No, say that again. Say that shit again. And I'm like, just waking up. And he says, like, okay, no. And he pulls out his phone. And he says, now do it.
What?
So I'm like, just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God.
Was he recording you?
And he recorded me. Rapping to It Was a Good Day.
Really?
Yes.
I never heard this story.
You didn't hear this story?
No.
Oh, my God. And it was like, now that I look at that, it was probably something he was just doing because he was being a jerk. But going back to the vibe in the locker room, it was just insane. And I think that coming from a team that had won 57 games, probably overachieved, as we all know, to really having to deconstruct a roster that Masai Ujiri was responsible for, to basically completely resetting 2 years after you reset before, to progress to what it is now. And I think that's one of the more remarkable things that I've seen, because the Nuggets didn't have a top three pick in that whole time.
Yeah.
It was the highest picks were Moutier and Murray. Seven.
Right.
So I think while there have been mistakes, I think Tim Connelly deserves a ton of kudos for where the Nuggets are. Right. I mean, I don't think they get there without him, personally.
No, I mean, there's absolutely not. They never would have drafted a single guy on this team without, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's so much there for him, and there's still so much left to do. It's pretty sweet, man. It was pretty fun watching the Nuggets in the playoffs this year. It's pretty cool to see just the growth of the whole organization. And, like, it's finally some of that fruit starting to pay off, right? Like, nothing that Conley wanted more than to get to the playoffs. They get to the playoffs. They beat the Spurs, dude. I didn't think I'd ever see the Nuggets beat the Spurs in the playoffs in my lifetime. I don't give a shit who's on that team. Greg Popovich is still the coach.
Yeah.
You beat Greg Popovich, you're doing some shit right.
I sent a text message to you and Andy. I was like, where does this rank among the Nuggets playoff victories? Because they beat the Spurs for the first time since 1985.
And you talked about it a lot on the Mortcast, as well as just the adjustments the Nuggets made in that series, and like how well Malone adjusted in that series versus Popovich.
That was a great series for Michael Malone. Not so much the Portland series, but because Terry Stotts outcoached him. And you could tell by the Game 6 and Game 7, the Nuggets were following the same pattern that they did in the Spurs series. And I think Malone just didn't know what to do by the second half of game 7. But honestly, that game first series, that was the best coaching job I've ever seen Michael Malone do, hands down.
Yeah. I was pretty disappointed with that overtime game. I fell asleep. I didn't even see any of the overtime. But just from hearing about and reading about, like, the lack of substitutions, that's something that's bothered me. for so long. Like when you go into overtimes and both coaches almost always decide to stop substituting people. So it's like when you're playing like a video game and all your players just have no energy. And then like you bring in one guy that just can fly around, you know, it's like, why wouldn't you make substitutions? And
only reason Portland won that game is because Rodney Hood came in and he was completely fresh. That's it. Literally, that was it. I mean, the Nuggets should have won in all four of those overtimes. Rodney Hood comes in at the fourth overtime and hits a big bucket because he was the only one who had any legs.
Yeah.
I mean, Malik Beasley was on the bench. You could have brought him in.
But then you think about the natural progression, right, of all these great teams that lost. The Warriors lost to the Spurs in round two, right, after they beat the Nuggets.
Yeah.
The Bulls famously losing to the Pistons. The Celtics losing to whoever they used to lose to. You got to get over these humps, right? You got to have these, like, in the NBA fairy tale land, this is the path. You're a young team. You get surprisingly good. People start paying attention to you. You lose in the playoffs. You come back next year. You go further. You do better. You come back the next year. You win the title. How long can you play with Jokic, though? Look at Mark Gasol with the Grizzlies. We compare Gasol and Jokic quite often.
Yeah.
The Nuggets compared Jokic and Gasol's numbers before drafting him.
Yeah.
Gasol is basically worthless now.
Boy.
Like, he fell off quick, didn't he? Jokic is not going to have like a 20-year NBA career, more than likely. He's not going to be able to play at a super high level for a super long time. I don't know. I'm just looking at Marc Gasol and drawing some conclusions. Did Gasol have a nice long run before he's starting to fall off now? Sure. But the Nuggets don't have a ton of time to win a title. Dude, can you imagine? You beat the Blazers. You don't have Kevin Durant for a couple games. The Nuggets match up pretty well with the Warriors, minus Durant anyway, I think.
Yeah.
The biggest problem with the Nuggets since the time he's came into the league is guarding Kevin Durant. He fucking kills them because he's so damn tall. I hope he signs with the Knicks because that will pave the way for the Nuggets to win a title. I'll tell you right now.
I don't even know how many of the players on the Warriors will because I think they have a decision to make on Klay Thompson. They have a decision to make on Draymond Green, too.
Nuggets should just sign Klay Thompson and solve that problem for them.
Talk about someone who would be perfect. Talk about someone who would be perfect for the Nuggets. Yeah. Klay effing Thompson.
I know. There's just a few guys out there that you can see with the Nuggets where you're like, man, I think you get that guy or that guy. That's why I have such high hope for Michael Porter because, honestly, you got defense out of Craig. You got defense out of Harris. If you had one more legit scoring option, you're going to kick some serious butt. The Nuggets just ran out of scoring options in the playoffs. It was either Murray, Jokic, and the third scoring option was a question mark every single night.
It was.
If Murray didn't have it going, you only had one scoring option.
Yep.
So
that is you are absolutely accurate. See, Nate Timmons, not quote unquote in the media, but still is more
pointing
wise
out
than most of us.
Obvious things is what I'm best at. I've always been good at pointing out the absolute obvious. And obviously the most obvious thing ever, Teep Tim Connolly. That's a tough one.
Teep Kim Connolly.
Teep Kim Connolly.
Yes, Keep Tim Connolly. That is absolutely essential. I think there's people who don't agree for whatever reason.
Well, it's just funny to think about the same thing with Malone, right? Like when the Nuggets hired Malone, it was like, that came out of left field. When they hired Conley, it was like, who? And then there was an article that came out from ESPN shortly after Conley had been with the Nuggets, completely ripping apart the Nuggets front office. And then the Nuggets laughed at said article and continued on with their plan and now look like evil geniuses. So, eat shit, everybody. Tim Conley is a hot-after commodity. Hot, sought-after commodity.
It's okay. You don't podcast much anymore.
I'm having a tough time talking. But Tim Connolly has turned himself from a no-name hire into a damn superstar, and that's pretty impressive.
I mean, he's
like a older Nikola Jokic.
Look at it this way. You know, everything is hooked into Nikola Jokic, right? When Jokic isn't here, how good does Tim Connolly look? You know, doesn't look that great. But at the same time, he needs credit for getting Nikola Jokic and then constructing a team around Nikola Jokic.
You
know?
Think about it, too. When the Nuggets drafted Yusuf Nurkic and then started to play him, think of how god dang excited the city, like, not the city, Think of how excited a lot of us hardcore Nuggets fans were with Nurkic's rookie season.
Cousins, yeah.
Going straight at Kobe. Yeah. Didn't he steal it from Kobe or something?
Remember, his he was so nervous in his first playoff game because Kobe was his hero, right?
Yeah. But I thought that Nurkic,
preseason, not playoff.
The thought at the time was, well, maybe this Jokic guy could play power forward because certainly Nurkic is the center of the future for this franchise. He was it, and it was this whole thing of, okay, he can pass out of the high post. Remember, they'd run that alley-oop play with Nurkic, and he would throw the bounce pass or the lob.
Yep.
Pretty damn good at it. Ran a lot of that action. It looked like Nurkic was legit, and then all of a sudden you play Jokic, and it's like, whoa, we got to pivot away from our idea already and go in this direction.
Well, you know what?
Those were two. That was right away you had a freaking fork in the road.
Fortunately, unfortunately for Nurkic, he got injured.
Yeah.
And he missed the first part of the 2015 season? And history was completely different after that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so often is the case, right? And who knows? Because Nurkic actually was having a great year this year until he got injured.
Second best player, many people said, you know, that he was
broke his leg in half.
Yeah.
You know? And it was, damn. I mean, like.
It's killer.
Yep.
All right, man. Let's get out of here, Morton. We had a good time podcasting.
If you're listening to this, Tim, we will incentivize you to stay by increasing your appearances on this podcast by eightfold.
Yeah, the next time we talk to Tim Connelly, we'll be on this podcast as a member of the Denver Nuggets.
Yes, 100%.
You heard it here first.
Come on back, Tim.
All right, guys. We'll see you all next time.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.